All right, welcome to another episode of Sheep Farm Podcasts. And joining me and Chris today is the prolific author, John Hamer. Fellow Huddersfield lad.
Terrific.
A prolific author. Well, to write the amount of books that John's written and go through the amount of stress writing them and getting them out there, I would say that's pretty prolific. Or horrific, whichever way he wants to explain
Bit of both, really,
it.
but
Bit of everything, yeah.
yeah.
How many books are we on now, John?
Eight, number nine on its way.
Number nine on its way.
Yeah.
If you were a lady and you're given birth, you'd be pretty messed up now, wouldn't
Yes.
you?
I'd
You'd be
be
ready for
nice
retirement.
way to put it,
I'd be
Fabian.
retiring.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe you've been more, no, I can't say you've been through more. I'm going to get some emails telling me that. But I suppose putting a book out there is a little bit like bearing your soul, isn't it?
Little bit, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's there's always, whatever you write, this bit of you comes over in it, because it, that's the way it is, yeah.
Yeah. Have we got a bottle of witch piss then, Chris? Because I know we're getting near that witching hour for you.
Got a bottle of Shiraz,
Shiraz.
South African Shiraz. I'm not
But
opening
would
it. I'm
it
gonna
matter
wait
if it was
another.
Shiraz or mouthwash, or would it really make any difference? Because the taste
Mess
buds have
re
probably been
that
destroyed.
that's don't you join in with him, John, for fuck's sake. Don't encourage him. Bloody hell.
All right, sorry about that, Chris.
That's all right. I'm joking. I'm thicker skinned than that, John. What was I going to say? No, I had a weird coincidence today. I was working in the kitchen, and one of the lads was talking about the Titanic Wheedler.
All
And
right.
then I went off and did my stuff, and I went, bloody hell, I'm talking to someone tonight, and I've got his Titanic book home. And I was explaining the conspiracy behind it. I don't think you were buying it, to be fair. Looking at me
No,
like I'm
people
off,
don't.
like I were off my tits. But it's I was going to mention it because it's still in the news, isn't it? The Titanic. Every time I look in Daily Fail online, there's always a Titanic song. I think the reason he brought it up is they've dragged it back up again. Oh, they need to go and have a look for this and look for that. And you start thinking from the story you've told, John, is it's a ritual, isn't it? It's part of the ritual to keep
Yeah, absolutely.
regurgitating it again and again and again and again.
Whenever there's a big line flying about, and there are plenty of them, they have to keep constantly reminding us of it. It is like a ritual almost. They drag it up all the time, and there's a certain incident that happened in World War II, allegedly, that they never leave alone. It's constant, 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 constant. And I won't mention what that
Yeah,
is,
is
but
it
I'm
that one
sure
where
we all know.
is that where numbers have keep going up and down? Yes.
Well, they keep going down, but yeah, I don't know about up.
Yeah.
I've
Well,
not seen them going up.
from their side they go up.
But
When you research it, they go down.
is it also a part of the they've got to
Yeah,
keep
that's it.
saying it as like a gloat that they got away with it and no one questions it, and
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
it's just
absolutely.
it's
Yeah,
very strange, isn't
yeah,
it?
but it's just to keep everything in the forefront of people's minds, so that specifically referring to the Titanic, they want everybody to know that that story that they told us was the truth, but of course
And
it
then
was pack of
regurgitate to
lies,
your kids and to other people, and
yeah. Same with things like bloody dinosaurs as well. Dinosaurs. I mean, what dinosaurs? They just absolutely hammer kids with dinosaurs. Why? Well, we
I
know
actually
why, because they catch them young, innit?
I've noticed since having my nip is now six, pajamas, you can't get pajamas without either dinosaurs on them. I saw some the other
And
day
these are just Chris's.
and it had dinosaurs, a UFO, a unicorn, and so they're selling space dinosaurs, unicorns, all at the same time. It's weird, isn't it? I mean, you
Aliens.
literally can't, yeah, alien, the alien story, which is selling the space story basically, the fake space story,
Is that
selling the
fake?
fake dinosaur story. We should have briefed on before we came on.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
I've been on fact checkers, apparently we're real.
Another one they're always selling is meteorites. I was mentioning earlier. Is there's always a meteorite 2 miles away from Earth, size of Empire State Building or some football
A double-decker
pitch, or
bus, or
it's always something like
yeah.
that, and it's just
Yeah.
gonna miss. It's
No,
like
yeah. No, Chris, it's hurtling towards
hurtling,
Earth.
yeah,
Yeah.
ripping towards Earth. But it'll miss. Will be all
Yeah.
right. Don't worry.
And it's missed all them
Yeah.
satellites.
So all these myths that they propound constantly, they just it's just trying to sell us an idea that isn't real, basically, in a nutshell.
Would you say that the Titanic, just speaking about the Titanic, we weren't going to talk about this, but the Titanic was the first mass mind control event of the 20th century? Which
yeah.
one?
Certainly the 20th century, yeah. I'm just trying to think. There's been lots of others prior to that, but I mean, just before the 20th century, there was a Spanish-American War.
That's right, yeah.
That was a complete false flag as well.
Yeah.
We won't go into that. But
the Titanic was probably one of the first ones, and I'll say probably was one of the first, that was pushed out and continued. I mean, you don't really hear about the Spanish-American Civil War, do you, or a lot of the other stuff, but the Titanic, like Chris mentioned there, is continually pushed out to school kids or anybody.
I think the Titanic had the advantage of being right at the beginning of the mass media era.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was radio was just on
telegraph
the verge of
and
coming
what have
in.
You. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a lot easier to propound the myth, and you know, with the technology available at that time than previously. You know,
and it was probably one of the first ones that was probably filmed, because there's a lot. I'm not saying there's a lot of film, but there's probably a lot of film somewhere of the Titanic, because they filmed it in Ireland at Island Wolf or whatever it was called. They filmed it in Southampton, and there is film of it setting
there
off.
Is.
And if it was that one, I'm saying the Titanic, by the way,
Well,
in
yeah, I mean.
exclamation marks.
Those movies are great for people like me researching it, because they give the game away completely. It's easy to tell that isn't the Titanic when it shows its maiden voyage. It's easy to tell.
Yeah,
right. Is it? Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the geek in us, as in the researcher, researches those finite details that when people are reading stories, they don't look at these finite details. They don't question that detail,
No,
and.
absolutely.
And people actually ask me, they say, when you're researching something, can't you show me how to research? You can't. It's not something that
No.
can be. It's like saying to Inspector Clouseau, for argument's sake, teach me how to catch that baddie. That some
Yeah.
people have just got that,
It's
and they've
like
made a
it's kind of
character.
an intuition. It's kind of intuition. You look for the signs and you know where to look. And people say to me all the time, you know, like you said, where do you get your research from? And it's a
Sometimes you
difficult
don't know,
one.
do you?
No, it
Sometimes
just comes.
you.
I mean, we're Titanic. When I was researching Titanic, which I did, it took me, I did that for 3 years almost solidly. I went all over the place. I didn't just use the internet, because the internet was very sparse on it.
Oh, no, I'll say you just use Wikipedia, John. That's all you'll use. Just looked at that and said,
absolutely. Yeah.
yeah.
My life would be a lot easier, wouldn't it? Really?
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I went to the Bodleian Library in Oxford, where they keep all the Marconi transcripts of all the messages that were flying back and to between the ships on that night. It's not on the internet. Went to the Bodleian Library, spent 2 days there. Went to Belfast. I interviewed people in Belfast about. I actually put an advert in the Belfast Evening newspaper. Is it the Evening Telegraph? Can't remember. I actually interviewed three families separately, and they all told me the same story, that the relatives, you know, their great grandfather or grandfather or whatever it had been, who worked in the yard at that time, had been told in no uncertain terms that if they ever breathed a word what was going on behind the dock gates, they'd never work again, not just at Howland and Wolf, but anywhere. So, yeah, lots and lots of stuff.
And let's face it, not working in those days meant you basically died, didn't you?
Yeah, there was no
You
social
starved.
security, no dole, you know, absolutely.
You'd live in
Yeah.
that area just to work there, wouldn't you? That's some
Yeah.
proper boots on the ground reporting, that is, John. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, no, people just, what were it? Dom Jolly said that we just get all his research from YouTube. We get
Yeah.
all his research from you. Did you see that? You won't have watched it, but we did an expose on Mr. Jolly, and
No, did you?
we found out that his great great grandfather was one of the first. He was on the board of the founding directors of the Bank of England.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, you can tell by the way he speaks, he's a posh boy, isn't
Well, he
he?
went to the East India College.
Did he?
Yeah,
All right.
so. Again, these people are putting in front of us, going back to who are regurgitating these stories. It's people like that. He might make a
Yeah.
few jokes about it. Someone else talks serious about it. Brian Cox will talk all scientific about it. And altogether, they're just pushing the narrative out again, aren't
Absolutely,
they?
Yeah.
And it's
Shills, they're called.
shills, yeah.
Shills.
It's quite easy to see when. And do they all know who they're working for or what they're doing? No, I'm sure some of them don't.
Yeah,
And
I
some of
agree.
them do. I don't think they're all working. I don't think they all are directly working for MI6.
Oh no, I think you're right. I think You know, some of them absolutely have no clue. They just think that they're the bee's knees, and then they know what's what, and they're privy to this information and that information. And, you know, we'll put Brian Cox into that category. I mean, you know, for an educated, yeah, for an educated person, allegedly, and I use education in the loosest possible sense of the word, he's a fucking idiot. Yeah, he really is.
I mean,
couldn't have put it better myself.
You could go up to someone like Dom Jolliver and go, right, we want a book about conspiracies. There's some cash to fund it. Get on with it. And that's all that it actually take, isn't it, to get someone to...
Oh, no, you need him to be on LBC interviewed by O'Brien. You need him to be on Mariana Springs show. You need him to be on all these other shows, giving that outlet like we'd never get.
Breakfast TV, you know, chatting on the couch.
Yeah, well, they've just been given, they're given a golden ticket, though, aren't they, just to get on with it and do.
Oh, absolutely.
I did a drawing of Brian Cockend, and I was reading this yesterday because I forgot about it, and I put, some shit has come out of that guy. He just talks nonsense. It would be, he says this quite a lot as well, because he was obviously in a pop band, wasn't he? It would be wonderful if ideas could be the new rock and roll. What does that even mean? Ideas.
Yeah, I have this. I sometimes say this about him, and that is, as a, it was in D. Ream, wasn't he? It was the keyboard player in D. Ream. I always say, as a scientist, he makes a very mediocre keyboard player.
Yeah. Every carbon atom in every living thing on the planet was produced in the heart of a dying star. Right? Where did you find that out? Where did you find that out?
You're not about the dark star. The Death Star.
And an explorer of the universe is sexier than a musician. Right? Listen to this one. I'll just say this one quickly, right? Because if you can tell me what this means, I'll give you a medal. Light is the only connection we have with the universe beyond the solar system, and the only connection our ancestors had with anything beyond Earth. Follow the light and we can journey from the confines of our planet to other worlds that orbit the sun without ever dreaming of spacecraft. To look up is to look back in time, because the ancient beams of light are messages from the universe, a distant past. See, it doesn't whistle, doesn't it? It's such a twat, isn't it?
Yeah, honestly, that is so bloody...
But has he written that? Has he actually? Because
word salad, I don't know.
His whole spiel is just like opening Britannia Encyclopedia. And his whole spiel is that. That's it.
Yeah, but he talks in cliches. I mean, that was just, you know, sentimental, syrupy gobbledygook, wasn't it?
Chris
just said.
That's a good description of it. Yeah. Syrupy gobbledygook.
But you expect a scientist, right, to be in a lab with Bunsen burners bubbling and smoke coming out of a glass bottle or something like that.
Or a chalkboard with loads of equations on it.
Yeah, doing something actually physical to try and work something out, not wearing some sort of leather jacket that and gets a graph out and says, well, this is true because I've got a graph, you know?
Yeah, well, Tesla was very, very vocal about theoretical physics, about theoretical anything, because that's what these people are. They're theorists. They don't do anything practical. They're just theorists. They just sit there behind a desk working things out and coming to ridiculously wrong conclusions. Tesla was very vocal about it, and he said that today's scientists wander off into a maze of equations and get lost in them and then come to conclusions that are just so far from reality that, you know, it's just untrue. Mm. That was a paraphrase, by the way. That wasn't.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Don't anybody write in and complain that I got the quote wrong.
Yeah, well, it's more the sentiment that he's on about that we're trying to capture there. But
yeah, exactly.
Hence why people like Tesla were silenced. Ended up with nothing. All the stuff robbed off him. I mean, Royal Raymond Rife was the same with his machine that he invented. And they still got the frequencies that are hidden. I know I've got frequencies upstairs that I use in some of my equipment, but the frequencies are copies. You never actually get the ones that the FBI or whoever it was raided him and kept. Someone's got them somewhere. Someone's got the machine somewhere.
I wasn't aware of that, but that's interesting. Yeah.
So the actual nobody actually knows the real frequencies.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the issue with a lot of the bioresonance stuff, that people will say they're the real frequencies, but in reality, nobody actually said, I've got an exact book of Royal Raymond Rife's frequencies.
Well, presumably they're all either destroyed or, like you say, kept under lock and key.
Well, I wouldn't have thought they'd have destroyed him, because they just took him off him, didn't they? Because he was curing everything.
Yeah, well, they burnt his lab down as well.
Exactly, yeah. Burnt, as in hid. burnt it down and hid it, and terrified him, just like a lot of these other players. I mean, just like, and it's slightly different, it's not Brian Cox or anything, but I'll use Gary Neville, the footballer, as an example, being utilised to interview Keir Starmageddon. So name I came up with today, Starmageddon. I want you to do a drawing of that, Chris. Starmageddon. It's a good name, that, isn't it? Interviewing him as a useful idiot. Now he's very vocal. Is Gary Neville footballer, and he talks in football terms. He talks some sense, I suppose. And he's a decent business guy as well, and what have you, and blah blah. Yeah. Apparently, whatever. But then he's utilised as a doting little puppy dog walking with Keir Starmer. And this is how they draw these people in. He daren't say, oh, there's Matt Letizia talking out, right? And they watch him getting silenced. I mean, these guys, they've earned a few quid in the time. They could step away and say, fuck you, what you're talking is nonsense, but they don't. Yeah. They're still taking their £500,000 a year or £1 million a year from Sky.
I believe in everything, though, far. It might be as duped as most people.
Well, he could believe in everything, but I don't believe everybody is not questioning. If you're in football, right, or any sport, not seeing people keeling over, right, and questioning that in 2019, there were probably one or two people keeling over, and now it's every another day.
Yeah.
If you're not questioning that, then you are thick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is no other answer to that.
I might have it wrong, but it's something like more in the last 4 years than in the last 20 years or something like that, isn't it?
Well, we were talking the other day, weren't we, Chris, about our old boy passed away in 2020, right?
Right.
And he had
COVID?
No, funnily enough, no, he escaped that stamp on his death certificate.
Wow.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah.
Right in the
down to heart condition.
Well.
Obviously, there were no jabs at that point. But this was July 2020. So it's just 4 years since, coming up to four years. Right. And anyway, what we're talking that since the jabs came out, so there used to be five mates who'd be down at farm messing about, right? And my dad and four other guys. All of them are dead.
Really?
Yeah. From early 70s to 82, which our dad were at that particular point. So they're all younger than him. All of them are dead.
Wow.
These are phenomenons that have never happened before in our lifetimes, apart from in World War One or World War Two, when people were getting mown down for like confetti.
Yeah, and to be fair, in the aftermath of the wars as well, because there was all sorts, you know, especially after World War One with the gassings. I mean, both my granddads died before I was born.
No, John, that was Spanish flu.
They both died in the early 40s. And they've both been gassed in the trenches in World War One.
Bloody hell.
So, yeah, even years later, people were dying from the effects of fighting in the wars, you know.
And let's face it, all these gassings, they were all inoculated as well at that particular point. When they were, I've got books, like diaries of people. As soon as they joined up, they were all jabbed. They didn't ask, they just jabbed it in their arm. Because they said use the word inoculation, whereas we'd say vaccine probably nowadays.
Well, it was the same with the. Do you remember after the Gulf War, the Gulf War syndrome?
Mm-hmm.
It was vaccinations. Yeah. It was vaccinations. Oh, they made out it was something esoteric or something weird that they couldn't possibly explain. Yeah. But it was vaccinations.
I think recently they've highlighted that it could have been a virus, John.
Gulf War
syndrome. Yeah.
I never thought of that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Same with autism as well. I wonder what's coming from
that virus.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
amazing. All these scientists and they've just come up with that. Yeah. Fantabulous.
Super.
I see NASA's cancelled their recent plan to go to the moon again. $455 million down Swanee to make another tinfoil beach buggy.
Because they can't go.
Really?
Yeah, they cancelled that.
Oh, you've spoiled it now.
Artemis. Artemis. Yeah. Okay.
I was going to ask you so much, John, actually. I think I brought this up on it. And it was my missus who brought this up, right?
Right. And
with me, actually. On the side of all the planes, say in the Second World War, when you think about it, they've all got a target on them. They have... Think of the English flight, the circle with it's literally a bull with a bullseye on it. They've got them on the wings and they've got them on the fuselage. Why would you do that? And then you think of the German planes, they've got a target that's kind of like a crosshair in it that you'd get in a rifle.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
What's the American one's a star, isn't it? I think.
Yeah.
A star, yeah.
But they've all not only got very, and the Japanese ones, a white flag with a red dot in the middle.
Yeah.
But they've all got planes in the Second World War that all look very similar or are a version of a very similar plane. And yeah. Then they've all got the markings in exactly the same places. But apparently they were all random sides that all just happened to go start fighting each other. It's bollocks.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't buy it at all. What do you think of that, though? What do you think of that? It looks like a target to me. When you think that the way I would see a war now is to kill as many people as possible, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it, if you're an evil panic psychopath.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought about that, but yeah, it's plausible.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So you've been doing quite busy recently, haven't you? Been doing quite a lot of events up and down the country.
Where I have, and I also did a podcast with a YouTube channel called Jeff Buys Cars. I don't know if you've heard of that, have you?
I have heard of Jeff Buys Cars, yeah.
Yeah, he's great. He's a great guy. And he came up to Scarbados.
Right.
And we had a day out with him and his family. It was great. Right. Went out for a meal. And then he interviewed me. I sat in his car. And and I'll tell you, it promoted my books. Mm. And I had something like 500 book orders, you know, direct from me.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was
well
fantastic.
Well done, Jeff Buys Cars.
Yeah, it was fantastic, but it absolutely wiped us out. Me and Karen, we must have spent 5 weeks solidly
posting.
Packing books up, and posting them, taking them to the post office.
Yeah.
It was horrendous in that way, but it brought a few shillings in.
That's brilliant.
Well, it's good having a new audience because it's very rare. Because, I mean, for you, so obviously selling books, you're sort of putting your ideas out to people that you've sort of that have bought your other books, if you like. So finding a new audience must be great as well.
Yeah, it was great. And I got one or two other podcasts from that I'd not done before. Richard Vobes. Are you aware of
Yeah,
Richard
Vobes? I've heard of Richard Vobes, yeah.
Yeah, I did one with
Hello,
him.
Richard.
He's a good guy. And
yeah, he seems a nice guy.
Yeah, yeah.
How many did you saw when we talked to us then, John? Like two.
Three.
Sorry?
Yeah, he has more returns when he talks to us. This book don't fit. But yeah, what we're going to say now, that the podcasters, there's quite a lot of people. Would you say more people are waking up?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because what I've been doing as well this year, more than I've ever done ever before, I've probably done more public talks this year than I have done if you add everything up going back. You know, maybe used to do one every couple of months on average. I must have done 20, 25 this year already. It's something ridiculous anyway. It's just been, you know, manic.
Yeah.
It's great because obviously, you know, it helps with the old funds and whatnot, but it's just been manic. But yeah, what I was going to say was answer to your question. The people obviously speak to hundreds of people when I go around doing this stuff, and everybody that I speak to, you know, has just recently woken up. Virtually everybody, you know, obviously
since
not
2020,
everybody,
sort of thing, yeah,
since 2020. It's just, I think COVID woke a lot of people up. I mean, let's say COVID.
When COVID hit, that's what we say.
When COVID hit.
Yes, when COVID hit. Yeah.
When COVID hit, it actually woke a lot of people up. And I think I think they realised that they needed to curtail it much quicker than they were originally planning to do. Because if you look at the Rockefeller Lockstep document, which was written in 2014, it lays it all out. It tells you about this pandemic that they're going to bring in, and it's going to last from 2020 to 2025. And of course, we were only subjected to it for 2 years. I say only because it was 2 years from hell. But so they curtailed it early, and I believe that because they realized, because they're not stupid, these people. No. Evil, yes. Stupid, no.
Scared, yes.
They realized that they needed to curtail it because too many people were waking up. And, you know, that's their biggest nightmare, people waking up to what's going on. And this is, I think, this trying vainly to step up the agenda. And I think it's because of that.
But I think that's
kind of got the paradoxical aspect of that is actually waking more people up, the more extreme they get.
Yeah.
You know, lots of people saying, you know, what the hell is going on? This can't be right, you know.
Yeah, well, again, what we spoke started with the Titanic, the bullshit with the Titanic.
Yeah.
The bigger the lie now, the more difficult it is because you've got geeks like us three that are willing to lift rocks up
Absolutely,
and put
yeah.
it out there.
And you've got all these fresh people who woke up in 2020
Yeah.
going backwards and looking at the
Yes.
old stuff.
Yeah, because and
Absolutely,
also
yeah.
they're of a fresh mind. They're not like us who are old, crinkled people who've been looking at it for years. They're
Yeah.
actually got energy because they're angry because they've been lied to and real. Just, you know what it's like when you realize you've been lied to. I remember when you re not necessarily a particular day, but I remember my mate Jacko. You've heard the story. He's from another. Well, he's from Halifax, is Jacko, but Huddersfax is from Crab Claws. We call him. I remember, but I was talking to him. He was ex-army lad, ex-squaddy, and I was telling him all this stuff. When I was quite ill, I'd left my business and I was going for walks and doing all this type of stuff. And he came with me because he weren't so well. And I was telling him all this stuff about 9/11, and this was about 2009, something like that. It's bollocks, that dumb. I would have squaddy and blah, 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 blah. About 3 years later, I went to see him and he stood on his steps on a warm summer day. And I was walking up to his steps at his house and he went, "You fucking bastard." And I went, what are you on about? He said, "You're right. All night I've been up." And that's what these people are now. They're like him. They're these new Avengers, if you like, that are pushing. They've got all the energy behind it, which must be pretty terrifying for the controllers.
It is, yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah, the one thing, the main thing that they live in fear of is us, you know,
Yeah.
is us being, you know, getting our collective asses into gear,
Yeah.
because that's what it all it'll take. And they know this. This is why they're bringing in stuff like AI and transhumanism. You know, if they bring in transhumanism and they succeed with that, I don't think they will, by the way, but if that's the game, if they do, then it's game over for humanity. Because transhumanism, we're finished. Because you know, out there, believe it or not, guys and girls, there are patents for the remote control of the human body, the remote control of the human mind, i.e., the ability to download and upload information to and from the human mind, to delete memories, all out there,
We've seen that
patents.
already, haven't we? I mean, Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, the deleting memories. That's the
Yeah.
lobotomization started and the deletion of memory.
Yeah,
Not only just to delete the emotional memory, i.e., the deletion. So you can't just remember that. You can't remember the feet. You know, like when you listen to a song and you think, that reminds me of something that happened in 1984 or whatever, right? Why did I say 1984? Anyway, but that part has been taken away as well, that emotional memory part of it. And we'll come to that because we're going to discuss the Huxleys at some point, I think, aren't
Ooh, if you like,
we?
yeah.
Yeah. I know you've been talking about those quite a bit recently, haven't you? And George Orwell, am I right there? Some of your
George Orwell
thoughts?
and Huxley,
Yeah.
yeah.
And
Do
you
a bit
know,
of
we've
that.
been doing a series of them. I think we're just going to release number 8 at some point soon. And we've done half
Okay.
a Huxley number 9 as well. So we're going through
Yeah.
the genealogy of where the all the family sort of spill out, future generations spill out into society today. A bit like
Right.
Chris has been doing some work on, he came across totally by accident. And again, going back to research, how do you train it? Most of it's accident, right? Not necessarily the research because that's hard work, but the you get like it's like a key in a door, isn't it? Once you find the key, you can open the door. So you get a name and you go, oh, hang on a minute, that rings a bell, that name. So you look at it and you think, oh, I didn't realize he were or she were related to such and such. Anyway, he's you tell the story anyway about
Which one
Nick
first?
Crowley's about Nick Crowley.
No,
Aleister Crowley.
I just keep spotting bloody Crowleys everywhere.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
even saw one as a director, a John Crowler, and I
Right.
googled him and then found some other John Crowlers who were actually authors and stuff,
All right.
all kinds of stuff. One was
But
the I'm going to do a bit
did you
more
find a
looking
link
into.
or a relationship?
Well, I'll
Or...
pass that over to Dom and I'll do the genealogy.
Yeah,
But
yeah,
then
yeah.
one of them was the CEO of a biotech company and stuff. I mean, you can't, I'm not saying they all are, by the way. I'm sure some of them
But
might be, but
two we know are,
yeah, we
right?
found
Yeah,
two
yeah.
who
So
were
one of them, a
from.
guy called Alex Crowler. Go on,
Yeah.
Chris. So tell that story of how we came about him.
Oh yeah, the one with Mrs. was at a work thing, and the presentation
At a
before
seminar, a work thing, a seminar.
a work thing seminar. You know, there's just the guy. One guy did a talk, and this other guy was coming on, Alex Crowler. And there was a by coincidence, the last one had left a picture of the cover of Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club. What is it? Beatles record.
With the picture of Crowley on it.
Crowley on it, yeah. And he came over and he goes, oh, that's a relation of mine. And my missus clocked it and thought, that's weird. And she went, she says, I wonder if it's Crowley. And he's called Alex Crowley. So she actually asked him. When he finished, he was going into an elevator and he looked quite shaken when she confronted him and asked him. But yeah, it was. It was. And he helped get Boris Johnson into mayorship and Cameron into power. He had like a PR company. Is it a PR company? No?
PR company, yeah. And it, one of his adverts on there had changed hundreds of thousands of minds on a petition.
And he's
mobilized hundreds of thousands, that's what he said.
His talk was about changing people's minds, I believe.
And he's definitely a direct cousin of Aleister Crowley. Oh, sorry, a direct nephew or grandson of Aleister Crowley. And then the other one is a guy called Nathan Crowley. Right. Okay. And he's a set designer for massive Hollywood blockbusters. And he's a definite, he's a definite, another 100% relation of Aleister Crowley. And he does all Christopher Nolan's films, Batman, things like that. Yeah. So we keep coming across. So the Huxley penetration, let's call it, is very similar to what we're just talking about there, but there's absolutely. Well, it's endless, isn't it, Chris? And names that you'll think, I didn't realise that were one of them. I didn't realise that one. Because they're not called Huxley anymore.
What are they called?
Well, like, one of them's called Tickle, ironically.
Tickle?
Yeah, and he's...
Through marriage.
Obviously, Thomas Henry Huxley, the bull, Darwin's bulldog, had seven or eight kids, and four or five of them were girls. So their children are called... They're not called Huxley anymore.
Oh, I see what you mean, right? Yeah, okay.
So Eckersley... I forget his first name. I think it was Richard Eckersley. He was born. He was one of the. He was the first. He helped set up the BBC anyway.
Okay.
He was the first engineer, head engineer of the BBC when they founded it, and he worked
Eckersley.
He worked for Peter Eckersley, I think it was. There were two brothers anyway. And also they headed up radar in the World War One, and they worked for Marconi in the secret development lab. And they're Huxley's. They're Aldous Huxley's cousins.
Yeah, I know one of his Eckersley's one of his distant relatives, Willie Eckersley.
So he'll be. They could be Huxley's. He could be a Huxley.
That was a joke. Probably a bit of a whoosh moment.
What were your take on the Huxley's then, John? What's your
Huxley's? Obviously, they are a part of the control mechanism, aren't they? They're not a bloodline family exactly, but they're, you know, a step or two down from that, aren't they? Mm. And we know about Aldous Huxley, of course. He was the grandson of Thomas Henry Huxley,
who
Dom just mentioned, Darwin's bulldog. He was kind of Darwin's handler, if you like. And he was tasked with heavily promoting the ridiculous theory of evolution, which Darwin didn't propound on his own at all. First of all, it was his grandfather, Erasmus Darwin, that proposed the theory in the first place, and Charles just picked up the ball and ran with it under the watchful eye of Huxley. So yeah, it was just a puppet, was Darwin, as with many, many other people down the years. So yeah, and there was Julian Huxley. You probably know more about it than I do, you know, but Julian Huxley was one of the founder members of the UN. So it's all intermeshed. They're all up to the scrawny little eyeballs in the same stuff.
Yeah, so Julian Huxley and Aldous Huxley do have a royal lineage back to Edward III.
Do they? Have you checked that out?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Oh, I'm not surprised. Well, I mean, that just answers the question, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like I say, you know more about the damn subject than I do. But for those who are not aware as well, Aldous Huxley wrote a novel called Brave New World, which was another similar warning from history, if you like, in a similar vein to George Orwell's 1984. But they actually come at it from a different angle, but they're both correct. Orwell warned of a repressive surveillance and security state. Stop me if you've heard this story before somewhere. You know, using sophisticated and violent forms of control. But Huxley was fixated on the idea of us being controlled by entertainment, you know, and personalities, and, you know, what the Romans used to call bread and circuses, captivated by technology and seduced by consumerism, and then unwittingly embrace our own oppression. And that's what Brave New World's all about. And it's like the same thing. If you could put those two novels together and weld them into one, you've got exactly what's going on in the world today. Because mm-hmm. it's the two elements, the two major elements of it. The repressive surveillance society and the, you know, the celebrity-obsessed society that encourages consumption and compliance, if you like. Yeah.
And pharmaceuticals, like Chris says. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pharmaceuticals,
of course, yeah.
It seems like when they were both written, that those two methods have been tested out all over the world, haven't they? Or variations of each method.
Yeah.
And is it almost like to get the information to see which one is the one they want to go ahead with, the New World Order?
Well, actually, you know, both Orwell and Huxley, they were both correct. I mean, I think that Huxley's is the first stage, if you like, first stage of our enslavement, if it comes to fruition. And Orwell's is the second stage, because once they've got us through Huxley's ideas, then this is where Orwell's ideas will come in, and that is pure totalitarianism, isn't it? You know,
I think that's the last resort, isn't it? 1984.
Yeah, and by promoting these books, which they do, promoting these prophecies as fiction, they can brainwash millions into believing that, you know, their ultimate goals are just, you know, somebody's vivid imagination.
Well, some research I did on George Orwell, you might have come across this yourself, but Eileen O'Shaughnessy, his first wife, who was a psychotherapist. A lot of these people are married to psychotherapists or psychologists as well. Aldous Huxley's wife was married to a psychologist. She was the one who gave him the LSD before he died. But she worked for the Ministry of Information, which was set up by Huxley. Not Erasmus Huxley. It was set up by Huxley. It's in the next podcast. The Ministry of Information. And she was also taught by C.S. Lewis and Tolkien at Oxford, right?
Yeah.
But she went to a school in Sunderland. She was from the Northeast. And on its 50th anniversary, she went back to school and they asked some of the old girls and boys to go, but it were a girls' school, so all girls to go and write something about 50 years into the future, which happened to be 1984.
Right.
Before she knew Orwell.
Right.
So she wrote a poem called 1984 before she knew Orwell.
Right. Weird, isn't it?
Yeah. And you could say she probably is Handel. And she seemed to have been knocked off pretty during World War II, actually. She died very suddenly in the Northeast. So she's an interesting character, too.
So was that research. Orwell's first missus then?
Yeah, Eileen O'Shaughnessy, yeah.
Yeah,
because he married Bramwell.
Sonia Bramwell, yeah. Well, yeah. Sonia Bramwell was a very interesting woman as well, because it's a bit kind of irrelevant, but it's interesting. She actually sold the rights to Orwell's books for a date with Clark Gable.
Wow.
Right.
Serious.
You can't make the shit up if you want it to, can you?
Yeah.
And she sold the rights to his books to the CIA, didn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. She did. Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
just for a date with Clark fucking Gable. What?
Well, I tell you that there's some odd stories about Sonia as well, because she was brought up in. She went to a convent and she ended up going a bit gaga and being sent to Switzerland, as you do. Everyone just gets sent to Geneva, and
when you
misbehave, you get sent to Geneva, and. She went out boating with three friends, another girl and two boys. And one of them either fell into the water, tipped the boat over. And she told a story about basically having to hold him underwater, or he'd have dragged her under because he couldn't swim.
Weird story.
Yeah, it was a very, very odd story.
And she got away with that, did she?
She got away with it, yeah. But it sounded more MK Ultra-ish, what she'd gone through. Where...
The reason she had to go to Geneva for is because that was before they franchised out the MK Ultra. Before they went international.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was an interesting thing I always found in 1984, John, which was when they're saying... you know, they can make bombs, and I think O'Brien says it, they make bombs and they can do everything and they can torture humans and they can do all this stuff. He said, but the most money they spend on researching is to try and read the human mind.
Right.
And then patents you were on about, and the Elon Musk neuro link.
Yeah. Well, you don't trust Elon.
It's the nearest, I think we've got to that world, isn't it, of where they can actually tune into your own
mind. Brave New World Order.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the last step that they talk about in 1984.
Well, what they've got to do is totally spasmo people, so they're begging for these things.
Mm. Right.
Make everybody that ill or that discontented or mentally ill, if you like, which is why mental illness has been playing a big... You've got the royal family, Prince William, in a changing room with all these ex-professional footballers talking about, you know, we should talk about his mental illness and stuff like this. Mm. That's just ready-made for a Neuralink or Soma.
Yeah. I went to pick up a parcel today and I ain't got a smartphone. I was in there for 20 minutes and I had a driving license with my same name as addresses on the parcel. And they were like, have you not got the link? And I went, no, I ain't got a smartphone. I said, but I've got my driving license with my name and my photo on it and my address. The same as, all right, I'll let me just go and get someone else. So I'm like, bloody hell.
Maybe your hair had grown. You know those three strands on your head?
I look like a Colombian drug lord on my photo, my driving license. To be fair.
Yeah. Right, that's another story. You've got quite a few talks that you do, haven't you? And we were talking him up before we started. He said he got 15. Do you know when you're doing your live talks?
That was just a guess.
How long do these things take you to put together? I know how long ours took to put together.
A long time. It's a week. It's a week's job, basically. You know, not solid, but on and off, it's a week's job, you know. Yeah. Probably 40 hours, something like that.
Yeah, but people be interested to know what goes on behind the scenes, because I don't know if this is what I get, is you don't know, you know a bit of what information you're going to put in, but you don't know where the start or the end is going to be, and you've got to sort of... Build it up, a bit like a comedian or telling a story. You've got to have some sort of punchline end of each little section of stories, haven't you?
Exactly. It's not an easy job. It's quite... I dread doing it, actually, but I just know that I have to do it because it's my bloody livelihood, isn't it? But I actually dread making a start because it's like, where do you start? And it's reminiscent of, I don't know if you remember when you were at school, they asked you to do a composition, they called it, or an essay. What did you do in the school holidays? And you sit there and you think, where do I start?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's very much like that. So sometimes I start in the middle. I just start.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think, well, that didn't really go there. That's better there. And then that's better there. And, you know, then it just evolves. Yeah. Unlike the human race.
But I mean, those 15, 50, those 15 talks, I mean, that's over a period of how many years?
The first one I did was Titanic, because that was my only one for quite a number of years. So probably over the last 8 years, I've probably started the rest.
Yeah,
Titanic was back in 2012. The first time I ever did present at Titanic in person, I was actually at New Horizons at St. Anne's.
Great place. Yeah, we did one over there, didn't we, Chris?
Last June. It's great. It really is great. The hosts are great as well.
Yeah, fantastic guys over
Rob
there.
Rob and Chris. This would have been 2012. And they put it on YouTube and it went viral. And I had like 700,000 views in the first 3 months. And then it's only got 300,000 views now.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Weird,
it's like kind of 12 years later.
The old yo-yo effect, YouTube
right,
yo-yo.
So that was the first one. Then I didn't do another one for ages and ages and ages because at that point in time, my dad got very ill and I kind of dropped out the loop for a while, for a few years, because I was having to go around and see to him every day and until he died in 2016, and then that kind of gave me a, then I kind of started again from the ground floor and built up again. So really, yeah, it's been about 8 years when I've been really doing them seriously. But yeah, I need to do a couple more actually, because I'm running out of running out of people that haven't seen them all yet.
But it is a difficult really. One, isn't it? Because again, you know, there's two things here. What you just said, earn a living there. For some reason, people have a problem with people earning a living in this side of, if you're writing a book on, I don't know, Mr. Men, for argument's sake, nobody would have a problem with having 10 yachts and a Rolls Royce and whatever else. But with this, you can't earn any money at it. Otherwise, you're a sellout.
Absolutely.
So unless you're living on the street, smelling a piss, drinking white lightning, you know, and whipping yourself with nettles every day, you know.
You live in a house fire, you still smell a piss.
Yeah, I know, whip myself with nettles. But what I'm trying to say is, unless you're doing that, then you can't be. The only people that can be honest, it seems, are the guy who's living on the street.
Yeah.
Which I find odd.
It is odd. But do you not think that might be symptomatic of the way that we're portrayed, you know, in both by the mainstream and by the truth movement? You know, the truth, you've got to be, you know, accepted by the truth movement, you've got to be virtually a bloody martyr, haven't you? Otherwise, oh, he's sold out him, he's a cop out, he's a shill. Yeah. I mean, I've been accused of it myself, and I just think, dear God.
Yeah, no,
so whenever I hear anybody say that about anybody, unless I've, you know, kind of observed it for myself, I just, you know, take it with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want to know what my talks are? Out of interest.
Yeah, let's have a look.
I have one called Winston Churchill, Traitor and Murderer.
Yeah. Sums it up pretty directly,
very light-hearted one.
Light subject, yeah. Pissed out twat at end of that.
I have the climate change hoax, the evolution myth, JFK, a very British coup, which is based on my book of the same name. Jack the Ripper and the Princess Diana connection. Money, the greatest sleight of hand. The nuclear weapons hoax. Suppressed technologies. The three pillars of fake science, or I've just changed the name of that actually to the falsification of science. Obviously, and then a Titanic deception is another one.
Yeah.
I do the moon landings hoax. I do the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. I do who really wrote Shakespeare. And what, there's one more.
I suppose
somewhere.
There's a small caveat in that one, not somebody called Shakespeare.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Who really wrote Shakespeare? Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it, really. So I don't know, that's 15. It's about 14 or 15. I can't remember.
Yeah.
So anybody out there listening wants me to come speak to their group, get in touch.
Yeah, all good subjects. All brilliant subjects.
Well, when we organise another local talk, I know we've been talking about getting you there as well as Mark.
Yeah, it'd be great.
And that'd be a great day. I mean, unlike yourself, I actually quite like doing the talks. I like putting them together. I like doing them.
Oh, right? You like putting them together. I don't like putting them together. I love it.
Yeah, I love that part. It's actually getting around to doing them that I find difficult because of time.
And
I don't really like, I'm not the best traveller. Since having Lyme disease, I'm not the best traveller. Obviously I do travel. I'm not saying I'm agoraphobic or anything like that, but it's more the fact that I prefer, not necessarily my own surroundings, but my own surroundings. Comforts, if you like.
He's like Howard Hughes, John.
Yeah, I'm Howard Hughes.
Pissing in bottles.
And growing his nails 10 inches long.
Yeah. Only to attack postmen. But yeah, anyway, yeah. So, no, I find it. And I also like organizing them myself, so I know what I'm getting myself into.
Yeah.
You know? But
that's a question, John. What's your ninth book about?
Can you say it?
Talk about it.
Yeah, I'm writing it jointly with a guy that I've met recently, lovely guy called Andy, if he's listening, Andy Ross, who lives in Ilkley, or near Ilkley. And he contacted me a few months ago and he said, I'm writing a novel. And I just wondered if you'd be interested in co-authoring it with me. I've never written a book before. I'd really love you, to get some help from you. You know, we could write it together and, share the proceeds kind of thing. So, yeah, that's the background to it. But it's about, it's called, this is the working title, and I think it's probably going to be the title. It's called Beyond the Wall. Okay. Now, I always said I'd never write another novel. I mean, I've got one called Titanic's Last Secret, which is based on the factual Titanic book, RMS Olympic, that one's called. I always said I'd never write another novel because it wasn't my thing. But my input is not massive. I've written one chapter so far. I'm going to embark on another one probably this weekend. He's writing the bulk of it, but I'm kind of organizing it, if you like, and making sure it all flows and doing all the grammar and punctuation and everything. So that's my contribution to it. But it's Andy's idea, to be fair. And what it's about what is beyond the 200-foot ice wall in Antarctica. And it's very clever idea. I'm not going to give anything away, but that's what it's about. Very clever. Very, very clever idea.
I'd say there's a lot of Elon Musk rockets there.
Yeah.
Like a big scrapyard full of them.
Big scrapyard full of them. Double-decker buses and jumbos and stuff like that there.
That's it, yeah. Because, I mean, it starts off, I'll just say this bit, it starts off with this people on this boat from New Zealand, and they pretend that they're going deep sea fishing, but they're actually going to go beyond 60 degrees south, which is verboten. It is taboo. You cannot go beyond 60 degrees south, otherwise you'll get shot at. And that's how it starts. And
don't give the story away.
I mean, that's one of my favorite conspiracy, if you
subject.
Like, actually, subjects. The Antarctic, because if ever no one can go there, you've got to ask that question, haven't you? Just on a very basic level, even if you're not a nut job like us a lot.
Yeah.
You once you know those facts, you've got to ask that question, why can't you go there? Is it because they're so worried about your safety that don't want you to freeze to death?
They're very kind and caring people, and you know, they don't want to see us shot, basically.
By them.
Because we would be.
Yeah. I think Scott of the Antarctic was part of that whole shenanigans.
Well, that's in there. That right. is in there. That's the chapter I've been writing. That is in there.
I think because we talked about it recently, actually.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, but that old sort of story. Again, going back to the Titanic, around that time where you see these guys with these jumpy videos, like what is it, Stanley Matthews playing football, and early videos of, you know, FA Cup final and stuff, in like wool gloves and stuff like that. that boat that's stuck in ice and what have you.
Yeah, Shackleton.
Shackleton. Just telling you how cold it is, isn't it?
Just telling you how cold it all is and what have you. That's the story we get from there. And the fact that they're telling us now it's melting, which is more bollocks.
Of course it is, yeah.
Someone at work actually told me today, I mean, we chat about all sorts. He's not into stuff like we are, but he was telling me about, Attenborough just did must have been a new Attenborough Blue Planet or whatever. And he was saying that the caps are melting and these walruses, this species of walrus, are going to become extinct because the ice is melting that quick. The cat all live on the ice, etc.
Right.
And he told me this whole thing, and I went, "Allah, I'm sorry, that's bollocks." I don't trust a thing out of Attenborough's mouth. He's the same one. When you think of the frenzy that happened after he made his documentary about microplastics in the ocean, frenzy. Yeah. Everyone's still insane. He drove the whole nation insane about microplastics.
And what are actual microplastics? The thing is, they're talking about microplastics. We see Lewis Hamilton collecting bottles on some beach after he's flown in on his private jet, telling us that we can't use petrol and stuff like this while he's driving around his F1 car. And he's collecting bottles with his glue-on dreadlocks, telling us he's saving microplastics from... But all the measuring is oil. They're measuring oil in sea, which you're going to find residue oil because that's where they drill for oil.
Well,
it's a naturally occurring chemical, isn't it?
No, fair, you got it all wrong. Because I've seen someone's hand in a picture, and it's got sand, and then it's got tiny little coloured particles in it. As well. That's what a microplastic is.
Beads of
it must be true then.
Yeah, it's definitely true. Yeah, I've seen that picture loads of times. Yeah. I've seen that picture more times than I've seen that polar bear drifting off on that iceberg.
Yeah, I do that in my climate change talk. I talk about the polar bear, you know, the polar bear section of An Inconvenient Truth, you know, that bloody ridiculous Al Gore film.
Yeah.
Yeah, where it shows these poor polar bears stranded on these ice floes. Well, the lady who took those pictures or who took those films, she's called Amanda Bird. She was a famous photographer. And immediately after that film came out, she came out in public and she said, those pictures were taken 50 yards from the mainland. And she said, and by the way, polar bears can swim 200 miles at a stretch without a rest.
Yeah. I think they'll be fine, Al.
I think the polar bears will be fine, AI. Yeah,
Mr. Gore.
Yeah, for good old Ali.
He's made $300 million out of $300 million, $330 million, $33 million out of global climate warming bollocks change.
Mm. Indeed. Don't forget the 33 cents as well.
33 cents, yes, for change. Yeah.
Yeah, $33 million and 33 cents.
And a lot of his prophecies that he told us in 2000, after he'd been paid off from losing that Bush-Gore war in the elections, never come true. The Maldives were going to be 6 foot underwater.
Got one of them.
Yeah, the building more hotels there.
And he still made a sequel. How do you do that?
Yeah, if we're not going to be here.
Well, he said that the oceans were going to rise 20 feet by the year 2100. And so far, guess how much they've raised?
A big zero.
We put it to our survey. Our survey said.
Absolutely, yeah. Because, you know, obviously, they use tidal gauges to check the sea level. And it's not moved at all since that film was sent out to deceive the world in 2001.
Yeah. The convenient lie. 2000.
Yeah. A convenient lie, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
We did a presentation on our friend Al Gore a couple of years ago, and his father worked for a petroleum company. Al Gore, and when he died, he left him Al Gore shares. So while he's been spouting all that nonsense off, Al Gore owned a massive amount of shares in this petroleum company, Occidental Petroleum, we're called. I think Gates has got something to do with that. They're doing something now at Occidental Petroleum about trying to save the planet.
And before he got into all this, Gore, he had a business partner called, I can't remember his first
Blood.
Name was, but his surname was Blood, and it was Blood and Gore.
Blood and Gore, man. I mean, but that was an investment company, weren't it? That was the carbon credit thing, wasn't it?
The carbon trading thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
I've got one of his quotes here, because I did a picture of him, and I put his quote behind him and just looked it up. The North Pole will be ice-free in the summer of 2013 because of man-made global warming.
Well,
a quote from his film, I think.
So do you know, if this world were real and it was just... people like him would be held over the coals to say, you've been spouting all this bollocks off. You've been in the World Economic Forum telling us you've had pop stars doing concerts for you and all sorts of other nonsense, and none of it's come true.
Yeah, well, no, just small correction there, Dom. It'd be hanging from a fucking lamppost. That's what it'd be if this world was just.
Yeah,
along with the rest of them.
Imagine how much terror, right? Yeah. Going back to the youngsters coming through school now, all of them. I mean, we've been doing, in part of our podcast, I wouldn't say it was a series, but we've been watching how many holiday horror stories they've been putting in the news cycles on a daily basis, 4, 5, 6 a day, you know, queuing at airports, baggage going missing, viruses abroad, this, that, weather abroad, all this nonsense, kids going missing abroad, all that type of stuff. Yeah. And, you know, he's part of that. He's part of that because now all the kids now that are coming through are actually questioning whether they should go on holiday.
Yeah.
Because the drive is that in 20 or 30 years' time, nobody will be going on holiday, will they? Or that's what they're trying to get to.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they want to restrict our movements. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I was looking on... I mean, I have one concession to the mainstream news, and that is MSN. And the only reason I do that, and it's on my page when I open up my computer, the only reason I do that is to keep up with, you know, keep tabs on the enemy, basically. Mm-hmm. See what bollocks they're up to next.
I will grow old. be.